a radio show host called Paul Gallant.
It's Gallant.
That's a G.
No. And George.
Thanks, Joe.
Yeah.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at Highland Pines Golf Club in Porter. Here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
All right, the Astros will try to get back on track tonight after Fromber's disastrous start last night, which was really good for four innings, and then it just completely fell apart. A couple of things here we haven't gotten to yet from the text line. A bunch of people want Carlos Correa back to fix these problems. I don't think Carlos fixes these problems.
Jeremy Peña is having an incredible season. I don't understand why you would bring back Correa just to be the governor of
the mound visit
the clubhouse.
Guy.
Now, maybe if at the end of the year Alex Bregman walks and you can get Carlos Correa on a short-term deal to play third base, maybe this is a different conversation.
But yeah.
I don't know that Carlos Correa is fixing the Fromber problem. I don't know that anything's fixing the Fromber problem. We've got a year of stuff. It's a list at this point.
Yeah. Question here from the 713. It says, question for the G-spot. Thanks. Do you think if we had brought in a manager that didn't know all these Astros, that Fromber would have that freedom to go rogue? Joe has known these guys and might be too much of a friend. There was a discussion happening earlier on the Twitch, like I don't totally disagree with, that this happens more often than we realize. But
no
maybe
doubt.
It doesn't go as poor as this.
But who do you think does it the most? And who do you think it pisses off the most? And who is going to respond to it and address it? Because Fromber just strikes me, based off of what we've heard about him over the past calendar year, as someone who marches to the beat of his own drum.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have strong leadership, you can deal with that. But if you don't have strong leadership, or if you have leadership that's learning on the fly, you have to figure out how to manage that. And that involves communication. And also it involves at times, if you are a leader, laying down the law. And for lack of a better term, I hate saying this, like, but being an alpha. And it does not feel like there's anybody in this clubhouse that would do that. I mean, you saw Joe Espada and Yainer Diaz throw Fromber under the bus after last night's game. And obviously, we didn't really see it in the clubhouse based off of any of the camera angles that were on the Space City Home Network showing conversations being had between these parties. But ultimately, someone has to tell him, like, dude, this is getting old.
I just don't know who it is.
It's supposed to be the manager.
Well, I do think that like part of this is, if I'm going to blame this on Joe Espada, it's because he gave him an inch and Fromber just took a mile. By letting him try to call his own pitches in spring training, I think you kind of set a little bit of precedent of hey, we trust you to do your own thing. And then in this moment, he full out and he went for it. I mean, he's throwing 99, but he's throwing stuff right down the heart of the plate, giving up home runs, collapsing, kind of like snickering, laughing on the mound. It was all bad. And
yeah, that did not help. Certainly his demeanor
no.
made it a little bit worse.
So, yeah, I mean, Joe Espada, it should be him. Like, this should be Joe Espada that, you know, goes to Fromber and says, hey, this can't happen again. And if Fromber doesn't respond, then that's when you do have to make tough decisions. You do have to consider Fromber's future as a member of the Astros. You have to consider Joe Espada's future. Not specifically because of this moment, but just as an example, like if he's going to guys and saying, hey, this stuff isn't working, you need to do things our way, the Astro way, then they need to fall in line and do it and listen. Because what are the Astros doing right now? Fromber Valdez is calling his own pitches. It's not working. Jose Abreu is doing his own offseason workout in which he overly corrected his swing, got too tight, put on too much muscle, and now they're bringing him back because they had to demote him for less than 30 days to Florida because he had his own offseason plan. Alex Bregman, yes, he's figuring it out, but he put on 25 pounds of muscle this offseason, and for the second time he's done that in his career, he started absolutely terribly. Like, the Astros seem to let the players do things their own way at times. And like, they got to rein it in a little bit. Like, whatever happened last night can't happen again.
I I'm with you in that it does feel like they're all doing their own thing. I don't know if Bregman's start is linked to his size or if Abreu's start is linked to his offseason, but hey, maybe it is. Whatever the case, I'm hoping at the very least that all of this is serving as a learning experience for Joe Espada.
It better be.
I mean, it really does feel like it is a problem of communication. We've already heard reports about how there are communication issues right now with him. And, okay, maybe he's not comfortable saying how he feels, but, I mean, you're the manager now. You were put into this spot, and, yeah, sure, you're going to be listening to Dana Brown, or Dana Brown's going to be listening to Jeff Bagwell, and then he's going to pass it along to you. Like, maybe those things are just the realities of the job, but you also have to have your own voice at a certain point, and it doesn't feel like he's really showing that on a regular basis. It feels like right now there's a lot of guys that are doing whatever they want.
A couple other things about the Astros before the game tonight. Officially now, one call-up down, one to go as we wait for the return of Jose Abreu. Chaz McCormick has officially been recalled by the Houston Astros to return to the big league roster. Trey Cabbage is going down to the minors. So for now, Joey Loperfido keeps his spot on the everyday roster. We'll wait to see what happens on Friday. Yesterday, Paul, before the game, Joe Espada was talking about Jose Abreu. He said, for us to see the adjustments he's made and to get him back going, he's going to have to play. If he agreed to go down there and make those adjustments, we're going to have to play him to get the results. So if there's any doubt about it, Jose Abreu is going to be the everyday first baseman starting on Friday, most likely. Mm. As soon as he comes up, he's going to play. He is going to get an opportunity to show that in 20 days or 21 days, whatever it's been, because I think it was the 30th of last month when this news broke, that he's made the adjustments to make it right. And John Singleton is probably not going to play very much. I don't want Jose Abreu to come back. This is the right way to handle this, though, I will say. Like, if he's going to make adjustments and you're going to believe in him again for whatever odd reason you want to because Jeff Bagwell is going to tell you to do it, like, he's got to play to see if it worked.
But I don't see how a week would have worked, or 2 weeks, however long it's been. I mean, it hasn't been that long.
It's like it's been 20 days, yeah.
20 days?
So, 20 days so far.
Okay. So what I read in Chandler Rome's piece in The Athletic is that they feel like his swing is simpler with less movement.
Okay.
It's more direct to the ball, more in control of his body, per Joe Espada. The rotation looks really good. I'm assuming Espada is watching film of this, though, not seeing it firsthand. I wonder how much you can glean from that, especially if you're not able to talk with him. I wonder what the communication between Jeff Bagwell and Espada, Bagwell and Abreu is on that front. And, okay, if you're going to let him back out there, fine. It seems like he's well-respected in the clubhouse. But going back to what we talked about when we first found out about this, you bring him back, there are other players in the clubhouse that are going to look at this with a side eye because players who are playing well are going to sit, and it's not their fault.
Mm-hmm. Now, John Singleton has made this a little bit easier, to be fair.
That at-bat that he had last night sucked.
Yeah.
So I agree with you there. That at-bat, more at-bats like that, I mean, that's just going to expedite his return. He had a really careless at-bat. I want to say it was in the sixth inning. It was earlier than that. I think it was the second or the third inning where, like, the last two pitches were, and he was swinging at whatever was up there. And maybe he's pressing a little bit because he's hearing this story. But this is how a story like this can affect a clubhouse, just with one player. I don't think this is, like, a huge problem, Abreu coming back from, the clubhouse morale is going to go down. But, right now, if you're going to bring him back up, as you said, they're going to play him. And, I mean, he's probably going to be bad again.
Yeah, well, and the thing is, he better not be. Like, he better be good.
He better be, but he probably won't be.
And Joey Loperfido has to play first base every single day in Sugar Land going forward.
I'd like to see that, but I also, again, think he's too talented and athletic to move out of the outfield.
But would you say that, okay, so if Abreu comes back and is bad, you want them to go back to Singleton, or would you rather them lose the athleticism from Loperfido and see him play first base every day?
No, I mean, if Abreu's bad, you go back to Singleton. I mean, Singleton's playing well defensively there, too.
He is, for sure.
So I feel like, yeah, you want Loperfido to maybe get a little first base experience, but I feel like that's going to take some time. And, I mean, I think also you really what you want Loperfido to focus on right now is you want Loperfido to cut the strikeouts down. So,
How important is tonight's game?
Because
like the vibes are good, and then when last night happened,
last night the vibes were ruined. Like, I'm not looking forward to tonight's game at all. I feel like I can only be disappointed.
That's why I think it's important, even for the clubhouse. Like, you don't want to spiral here.
No.
Like, a big bounce-back win tonight from Javier, a good performance from Javier, like, that'd be nice.
It would be nice.
Be very nice, Paul.
Yeah.
I like talking about fun baseball things. Well, unless it's like this. People on the Twitch think that I love to hate on the Astros.
Why do they think that?
I don't really know. I think they struggle listening, some of them.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. I think the part where, like, I said trade Fromber, but then I said the Astros can win a World Series or go to the World Series without him, it's like they missed the second part of that.
Mm-hmm.
They only hear the first part. I think they struggle with the whole
listening
thing.
I don't get why there's like anyone that's sort of just letting this roll over their shoulders too. Like, this is a one start thing. Like, there's a track record with this of Fromber over the last year, and like, this is the worst part of it. I mean, I don't think there should be any grace for Fromber today. And okay, yeah, he's gonna have another start soon, but like, does he deserve it? In any other sport, he would be sat. Any other sport. And I've seen arguments, well, he's their best pitcher. Is he really their best pitcher? I don't know that that's the case. And that's
it's hard
not good
because
Javier has been inconsistent and Justin Verlander's walking everybody.
Because like his last start, the 7-inning one where he had 8 strikeouts, like that's elite Fromber. Like that's the Fromber where he goes out there and you go, okay, that's the guy who was at one point last year the betting favorite to win the Cy Young. And which he was that's what he was the first half of the season last year. The guy who had, 25-plus straight quality starts. Like that's who Fromber can be. And I think that's really the frustration with this, with what happened yesterday, is that my expectations for Fromber are much higher, it appears, than other people's. And I think the same goes for you. Like last night's inexcusable because we've seen him be one of the absolute best pitchers in baseball.
He had the 22 season. Where he was so damn consistent. And then last year happened. And the year before that in the playoffs happened. And this year's happening. And, I mean, yeah, he's got great stuff. Lots of pitchers have great stuff. His inconsistency is maddening. And the bad habits that he seems to have where he goes rogue happen a lot. And last night was not a one-night thing. If it was a one-night thing, this would be easy to let roll off of your shoulders. But a blown 6-1 lead with all of the things that we hate about Fromber, the reason that lead was blown, I don't know how you look at this and say, like, yeah, it's just one game.
Yeah. So very randomly on Twitter, we get tagged by Big ESPN Radio in tweets. And normally I just ignore them. But this one I actually thought was an interesting question, okay? That we'll get to next. Which athlete in sports history underachieved the most while still having a great career? And they tagged us in this tweet because they included a Texans player as one of their main examples. We'll get to that next year on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. It's Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at Highland Pines Golf Club in Porter. Here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
All right, so ESPN Radio, big ESPN Radio, tagged us and a bunch of other people in a tweet today. And the question was, which athlete in sports history underachieved the most while still having a great career?
Sounds like they're engagement farming. Elon frowns upon that, you know, supposedly.
Not a lot of engagement. I think they wanted us to retweet it. We didn't do that. But I like the topic, actually. So they have Andy Murray here, a tennis player. Yasiel Puig of the Dodgers. Carmelo Anthony. And then Jadeveon Clowney as the one that represents Houston here in this tweet of which athlete underachieved the most while still having a great career. I'll start here. Does Clowney have a great career? I think great's a strong word
great,
for Jadeveon Clowney.
No.
Good, yes.
I do think he was an elite run defender, but you drafted him because you thought that he was going to be this fearsome pass rusher. I feel like a lot of his time in Houston, maybe even half of his time in Houston, was affected by their stupid-ass pallet grass BS that they had at then-Reliant Stadium. That was the dumbest thing ever. I don't know why when they built that stadium, they thought that having a bunch of square pallets of grass in a grid would work. I remember the disgust with which Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth crossed the field pregame once, just looking at this essentially field that looked like it was war-torn, a little World War One action going on, and a little mustard gas farted all over the place. This field looked like crap, and Clowney, in his first game, stepped in one of those divots on the field and hurt his knee. The entire year he was dealing with a knee injury because of that. We know this because DJ Swearinger told us that his knee got caught there.
Yeah.
And it was during a time when the Texans were trying to get around a lawsuit against Brett Hartman. So part of, I feel like, Clowney underachieving in Houston had to do with that injury. His second year, it was his first full year. He wasn't 100%. His two seasons after that, 16 and 17, I thought he did play well, though.
Yeah, I think he's a good player. He definitely is underachieved, for sure. He's had a good career. Like, the hype was unwarranted.
Yeah.
All they showed was one play from the year before.
It really was. And guess what? It was him tackling a running back, which, ironically, that's what he ended up being best at doing.
Yeah.
Tackling running backs. He was a really awesome run stopper, and he doesn't get nearly enough credit for that. But at the same time, he was portrayed as this pass rusher that was going to get 15 sacks a year.
And he just wasn't. I mean, look at what's happened to him since. He couldn't get paid by anyone. Like, if Clowney just would have taken a contract that was fair, he would have been a Texan for a very long time. Instead, he bounced around getting one-year deals, and he finally got a two-year deal now in Carolina?
I don't know. I feel like he and Bill O'Brien, they were never going to be compatible.
That's fair.
And I don't think...
Not that many are.
I don't think there was any contract that was ever going to keep him around long term. And honestly, I don't blame him for looking for as much as he could possibly get. Like, he had years where he showed, like, oh, wow, man. But the off-the-field stuff, I think, always drove O'Brien crazy. But he has not had a great career. He's had a good career.
Yeah.
And I feel like the being picked number one overall has been unfairly held against him. I mean, he's still in the league. And it's a lot like Mario Williams. It's ironic they both were the same number. Both of those guys were very, very talented and good players. Mario Williams was more in the sack department. But there were off-the-field things. And by off-the-field things, it was literally just work ethic issues that were hinted about regularly about how much do they actually love the game. And it sucks because they weren't busts. They played well in the NFL, but people expect number one overall picks to all be like Hall of Famers, and that's just unrealistic.
Yeah, Carmelo Anthony on this list definitely like makes a ton of sense. Like, he had a great career, but he underachieved more just in the postseason. Like, regular season wise, he's a great success.
Mm-hmm. As a professional, he underachieved. Like,
yeah.
It's funny because, you know, he's thought of as one of the best Olympic basketball players ever. And he won a national title in college on his own, essentially. But, yeah, the NBA level, was he ever as good as he was billed? Someone texted in James Harden. I so agree. So agree.
Underachieved?
I feel like with Harden in the playoffs, to falter that many times.
Yeah.
No matter what you do in the regular season, it's one thing if you're just one of those guys who ends up being on a team that consistently ran into a buzzsaw in the finals or conference finals or something like that.
Mm.
But how many moments, how many memories of Harden faltering can we remember in big spots or being off the court in big comebacks? Like, there's such a track record with Harden's postseason resume that you have to say that he was, no matter how good he was in the regular season. I mean, he's one of the best regular season players ever that we've seen offensively.
100%.
At least in the last 25 years. But the playoffs are just a totally different story.
Yeah, I don't think it's that different than Melo. I mean, Melo had less playoff success than James, obviously. Not that James has had a ton. But Carmelo Anthony doesn't have a lot of deep playoff runs. Hell, he doesn't have a lot of past the first round playoff runs
yeah.
in his career. Would you put Mike Trout in this category? Great, underachieved.
This is tricky.
I mean, he's like an all-time player, but he has three playoff games.
I mean, if baseball is an individual sport, Trout's always done his job. I think it's funny to make fun of Trout and say that he's not a winner because it is a disingenuous argument when you're making it. But it's fun to do it anyway because it drives some of the baseball heads, the online nerds, so mad. But, yeah, I can't blame Trout's – I can blame Trout for still being with the Angels.
Yes.
For not being successful. But Trout on the field has not been the issue for the Angels. There's a lot of similarities between him and Ken Griffey Jr. They're going to be thought of as some of the best players ever, but just injuries regularly happening and constantly on teams that weren't very good.
Yeah, I mean, Griffey, like, he's got to be up there. I mean, you know, he's got so many home runs.
Yeah.
He's arguably, to me...
Ken Griffey Jr. is as far as what? Underachievers?
Like, a postseason underachiever. Obviously not regular.
I mean, that's the problem. He just never made it.
Yeah, I mean, to me, Ken Griffey Jr., like, I'm... some people think it's a good take. Some people think it's bad. There's no evidence that he ever cheated, so that's why, to me, he's the greatest baseball player. He's the best home run hitter of all time. Like, he did it clean in the biggest cheating area. That's why I think Pedro Martinez is so special. Because he also was clean. And he was dominating. He was the best pitcher in baseball for like 4 years.
Yeah, he was.
And his stuff was incredible.
God, he was my favorite baseball player ever.
Like, he's doing it against guys who are cheating left and right, and he's just striking them out and getting ground outs and, like, just dominant.
Oh, yeah. 99 All-Star game at Fenway Park where he struck out, like, all the roid heads in a row.
Yeah,
it was, like, five of the six batters that they were going up against. All of them were, like, definitely on steroids. They all looked like those 1990 Batman cartoons where everyone's, like, torsos, like pencil, but their chests are, like, eight times as wide as their legs.
B. Hannon says T-Mac.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, he's another injury one where, like, doesn't have a lot of playoff success, obviously bounced around quite a bit, like, was supposed to be, like, probably unfairly labeled, I would say, coming out of, like, where he was in the NBA. People wanted to put the next Michael thing on him. I hate that they're doing it to Anthony Edwards. Stupid. You should never put next Michael in any category. There's no next LeBron. There's no next Michael.
Well, they do it with next Tom Brady. So, I mean, why is Michael Jordan immune from that?
I think next Tom Brady should also be in that conversation.
I, to a degree, I agree. But at the same time, like, this is just sort of how sports conversations go. So you're always going to be comparing guys to the best player ever, especially in the individual sport like at basketball where, you know, one player can do the absolute most to impact a team's, you know, winning.
Anyone else that popped to your mind for this? I was trying to think of quarterbacks. My first
Dan Marino.
Thing. Yeah, it's definitely Dan.
Dan Marino, I mean, look.
But the stats are so good, but he has nothing to show for it. I was thinking Charles Barkley kind of as well.
Dan Marino gets a lot of excuses made for him, and look, I get it. I mean, maybe the Dolphins weren't all that good after the second year where they made it to the Super Bowl. He did make it there his second year, but I don't know. I can't think of, like, any real positive moments from Dan Marino in the playoffs. Now, part of that has to do with the fact that, like, my memories of him, I think the last game he played, he lost to the Jaguars like 70-6.
Yeah, he got smoked.
Right, and also I remember a game against the Patriots in the playoffs where he threw an interception to a linebacker that got returned for a touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
So, look, I think when we're looking at Marino, there's also the dynamic of the NFC was just way better than the AFC every year. So even if he got there, what would happen?
Yeah.
I mean, John Elway made it to the Super Bowl before the Broncos got skull bleeped by every team that they went up against. So, and it's weird. Like, a lot of people will put Marino above Elway. And as someone who's really watched, like, the tail end of both of their careers, I do think it's interesting, you know, with the way Elway finished it with the two Super Bowls at the very end. It could have been three, honestly. They would have probably won in 96 if they had made it. They lost to the Jaguars in the second round. But Marino, I mean, it's one appearance. And, you know, like, I were the Dolphins really that bad from 84 on?
B. Hannon here also says Philip Rivers. That's a good one.
But Rivers.
Great career. But what did he accomplish? Nothing. He's got 10 kids.
I mean,
he did play in an AFC title game on a torn ACL.
Yeah, he played in a torn ACL on a game I was at when LaDainian Tomlinson sat on the bench with an injured something. Interesting. In that game, also, I mean, it wasn't Rivers' fault that the 14-2 Chargers blew that game against the Patriots in the playoffs the year before. They should have won the Super Bowl that year. But Marlon McCree, for whatever reason, tried to return an interception well past where he should have, and Patriots wide receiver Troy Brown stripped him, and the Chargers blew it that year. But I can see that. Rivers beat Peyton Manning a couple of times in the playoffs, though.
Yeah.
I guess what's unfortunate for Rivers is that he's in the same draft class as two quarterbacks that won two Super Bowls each, in Roethlisberger and Eli Manning. So
it kind of makes it feel like he underachieved, even though the stats are great.
Yeah. I don't know, though. I have a hard time doing it with Rivers, mainly because he played in that AFC Championship game on a torn ACL. I thought it was badass. The team was undefeated that he went up against, and it wasn't his fault that they lost. Now, Ladainian Tomlinson, I really do not know what the hell kept him out of that game.
Brian, you have one?
Yeah, this may be a hot take because this guy has won a Super Bowl, but you talk quarterbacks, and I think before Mahomes, this guy was leveled as the most talented, especially arm talent, quarterback in NFL history. I mean, Aaron Rodgers, to only get to one Super Bowl, for as talented as people make him out to be. But like I said, before Mahomes, people were saying Aaron Rodgers was the most talented quarterback they'd ever seen. And he only gets to one Super Bowl, and that was what, like 10, 12 years ago?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, look, the Green Bay Packers as an organization.
I mean, same thing with Favre.
Yeah.
Favre only won Super Bowl.
Since I've been born, in 1992, they acquired Brett Favre. The Packers have had a top 10 quarterback, top 5 quarterback, every single year of my life, and they have two Super Bowls. So I have no problem including Favre and Rodgers in that conversation.
Favre won 3 MVPs in a row, and that was a big deal.
Rodgers won 2 in a row?
I forget.
He won the 2014 over Watt. I think he's got 3 total.
Yeah, he won the one over. I think he has 4. I think he has more
maybe
than Brady.
Because he beat Joe, you're right. He did win back-to-back years recently, like in the last 4 years.
Yeah. But, Rodgers definitely. Rodgers has a lot of excuses made for him with some of the playoff departures that they've had. I mean, that team has been one and done in the playoffs a lot more than you would have expected. But for me, Favre drives me crazy. Favre threw so many interceptions.
So many.
And I felt like Favre, no matter how fun he was as a player, I thought he was remarkably careless, and he gave no bleeps about preparation. And, I mean, honestly, it sort of showed in that lazy picture that he sent. So I look at Brett Favre as a guy that could have been a lot better if he put in really any work into the X's and O's. He threw the most interceptions in NFL history. He threw 6 interceptions in a playoff game once.
That's pretty
against
bad,
the Rams.
Paul. All right, when we get back, it's time. It's time to get deep steel blue-pilled. That's next here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
I assumed you knew.
Little blue pills can take 30 minutes to get you ready for excitement.
So that's why we're giving you a big, deep, steel blue pill.
You take the blue pill, believe whatever you want.
Get it up for the Texans and take this deep, steel blue pill.
And by the way, she'll like it too.
Texans swarm. Yeah, baby.
Yeah, football's back.
OTAs are back.
Aaron Rodgers said today he officially had to make a decision between retiring and being RFK's running mate or playing football. He chose football. Before we get to the deep steel.
Oh, okay. Stuff. I was about to say, did Aaron Rodgers have a thought on the Houston Texans?
No, I just wanted to throw that in there because I saw it and it made me giggle.
Okay. What does RFK think about the Houston Texans?
Oh, he probably thinks they're going to be great. You know who thinks they're also going to be great?
Who dat?
Dan Orlovsky.
Dan
Orlovsky. He loves the Houston Texans this year. He thinks the Texans are going to be very good. Here is Dan Orlovsky talking about how great the Houston Texans' weapons are for 2024.
And he's exactly right, Nico Collins. Think about all the different pieces that they have. They have vertical speed with the Tank Dell, someone you can get the ball into his hands and go make something happen. You have this route runner extraordinaire with the Stephon Diggs that you can get in those one-on-one matchups. You have a Nico Collins that is a big-bodied guy that can win with some contested stuff. C.J. Stroud, obviously one of the best young quarterbacks, certainly quarterbacks in the NFL. So they have all these different pieces of guys that could play roles, let alone a Dalton Schultz, let alone their draft pick, a Cade Stover. So everyone has got a role that they kind of excel in, and that's perfect for this Bobby Slowick offense.
Hell yeah.
Perfect.
Don't you love the music in the background as Dan Orlovsky just
lists everyone on the Texans offense.
I think the times when ESPN, like the way that they do their videos and television shows and the way they put in music and then drop it out,
yeah.
It's one of the most bizarre things I've seen. But then it just goes away.
It does.
And then it comes
away.
Back. And then it's gone. And then it's back.
But it's football time in Houston.
So how do you feel? How does that make you feel? Does that make you feel deep steel?
Put
blue
some
pill?
Respect on the Texans' name because of that, man. Dan Orlovsky just listed everybody on the offense.
Case Stover.
You don't have that many weapons. You don't have nothing. You know, you're bringing a knife to a gunfight, and I'm bringing a bunch of ICBMs.
Mm.
You're done.
Done. How good is their offense going to be this year? Top five? Top 10?
I feel like we did this before.
Probably.
I know. We're already recycling off-season topics class.
Man, it's, you know.
I think it's top five minimum.
I think so, too.
Barring injury, of course. But I think really the question is going to be, can they figure out how to be balanced? How much better is the running game going to be? If the running game is better, then C.J. Stroud's going to have a much easier time.
I do feel like that when you hear Orlovsky and other people talk about the Texans this year, they do dramatically overlook the Joe Mixon acquisition. And maybe it's because it's not splashy like Diggs is and keeping Schultz. But I do feel like that they, if they're going to take the step that you want them to take this year and become a top five offense, to your point, like Joe Mixon's a huge part of that. Like they, when Singletary was good last year, it was great for the Texans. But even then, that wasn't that often. Like they weren't running up and down people's throats the entire season. He had a couple good games. Like, it wasn't the way people gassed him up last year, I think is the fair way to put it. So if Joe Mixon can be what he was for you in Cincinnati last year, which is a good ball catcher out of the backfield, 1,000-yard rusher, like C.J. Stroud should just eat pretty consistently this year. And that's going to matter a lot. I don't know. I'm starting to feel like...
You don't know or you know?
I don't know how I feel about the Texans hype.
Oh, that means we got to play the battle red pill. You're taking the battle red pill.
I don't think we've played
that means
it.
You want to say the reality. We have played it.
Have we played that one yet?
Well, yeah, the battle red pill means that you're not buying into it. The deep steel blue pill means that you want to live in dreamland. Dreamland is great. You get to have a stay. Who would want to get out of the Matrix? Like, what an idiot you have to be. Now, yeah, it might be weird to be possessed by 10101111 Agent Smith from time to time. But I agree with Cypher in that show, in that movie. Ignorance is bliss. I don't want the real world. Oh, great. I get to have, like, gruel and live on a boat with a bunch of, like, slobby post-apocalyptic people. Hell no. Give me that blue pill. The red pill means that you see all that is.
It's just the hype's gotten pretty high for the Texans this year.
Yeah.
And as good as I think they're going to be.
Not high enough.
Well, it's going to get higher.
Can you take me higher? Texans going to a place with golden streets? Hello, my friends.
I don't know what you consider like a very popular analyst, but there's probably like 15 to 20 like the most famous NFL personalities, like you have like your Mina Kimes, your Nick Wright, Orlovsky, all these kind of people. There's probably like 15 to 20 that people care about the most.
Mm-hmm.
If I set the over-under at 2.5 of those 15 to 20 people pick the Texans to go to the Super Bowl and win it this year, would you take the over or the under?
I think I'd take the under.
Really? See, I think it's going to be over than that.
I don't think that many people are going to pick them to make it all the way to the Super Bowl. I think some people are going to go in all in on the Kansas City Chiefs. I imagine some people will pick the Bengals. I mean, look, there's no doubt that they are getting more hyped, what you just said. I mean, and maybe these are things that come back in other Deep Steel Blue Pill segments to get you pilled up, but I mean... We saw Mina Kimes thinking, like, there's no way C.J. Stroud regresses. We got Ryan Clark saying they're poised to make a bigger splash this year. And it does feel like every single day we're seeing something. And, yeah, there's no doubt. The hype could make me as well, Joe, a little bit uncomfortable, just given their history and the fact that things were very close to not making the playoffs last year. But at the same time, you got to buy into some of it. The very least,
for sure,
with C.J. Stroud. I don't know that there's going to be that many people picking up to go to the Super Bowl, though. I don't. I feel like if you do that, people are going to look at you with a side eye because the schedule's just so hard this year. I think ultimately that's going to bring a lot of people down, tuck it in the old waistband.
Yeah, I do think the Mina Kimes thing is that's definitely a stretch. No chance of like a sophomore slump.
I think I might have hyperbolized what you said. I think she's not worried about a Stroud regression.
Same thing. If you say you're not worried, you're basically saying there's no chance. Like to me, like those are one and the same. You are declaring that you have full confidence that he is not going to take any step back. Like, he's not going to throw only five picks this year. The rest of the stats might go up. But, like, he's not going to be that perfect again. Like,
he did get lucky on a couple of near interceptions last year, too. I mean, there were a couple of dropped ones. So there could have probably been about 10, maybe 11.
Yeah. I wouldn't have it on my bingo card. Like, it wouldn't be my first lottery ticket that I would purchase of him having a sophomore slump, but it's on my radar. Nice. I hope there's no chance. I hope she's right.
Yeah, I do too.
I hope that CJ Stroud's awesome this year.
Everything's good. Everything's good. It's football time in Houston.
Are you going to make a remix for me this year? For us this year? A Shania Twain football time in Houston?
No, that doesn't work.
No?
Why not? We did Shania Twain came naturally. We can't force things, Joe.
Can we make our own
version? I'm an artist.
Can we make...
I am an artist.
Can you, when you feel inspired...
You are trying to commission my art.
No.
You're trying to force it. That's not how it works.
No. I'm saying when you feel inspired, can we...
You're uninspiring me right now.
Can we record our own version of Football Time in Houston?
I mean, you are a musical theater guy.
I'm aware. I said we, Paul.
I feel like...
Paul, I didn't say you. I said we.
How about you?
We're a team.
True.
Sean, I don't know if he'll participate. He's not on the show today.
He's not a musical guy.
He might press record.
Okay. Well, I mean, where do we start here?
I don't know. We have to pick a genre.
Can I be the falsetto?
Oh, you know what? Why don't we do...
I feel pretty. Oh, so pretty.
Let's do this. I'll take the football time in lyrics.
Okay.
Football time in Houston lyrics.
Yes.
And I will find... a Christmas song to pair them with.
Well, hang on.
And in honor of the Texans playing the Ravens on Christmas, we'll make a Christmas carol for football time in Houston.
Okay, but only if I get to like sing like the, you know, little children in choirs.
Yeah, go for it.
And that Christmas
also means
time is
I have
here.
7 months and 4 days to make this. So I'm giving myself a nice little window of opportunity to do this as well.
Well, be careful when you do that, Joe, because the next thing you know, you might not have sent your New Year's cards out, and it's May 21st. Maybe I'll do them tonight.
No chance.
Nah.
All right. When we get back, an update of all updates on Jose Abreu. We got it for you next year on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Back to Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios located at Highland Pines Golf Club in Porter.
All right, thanks to Highland Pines Golf Club for having us out today for the occasional invitation. The Killer Bees will be on from 3 to 6. Probably not right at 3. They got two holes left, so I'm probably going to yell about Framber Valdez for like 5 minutes.
Ha.
Can I drive the Twitch chat to zero? No, I'm not going to do that. But I do have some updates. Okay,
just we do.
If you missed it earlier, Chaz McCormick has been reinstated. Trey Cabbage is going to Sugarland. But the one that it matters the most,
he's back.
Kind of. Jose Abreu today went 3 for 4 with an RBI. Against the Florida Cardinals and the West Palm Beach League, he is now 6-for-18 with an 844 OPS in 4 complex league games.
Here's how the Astros should have spun this. They should have said that, one, Jose Abreu had a 3-for-4 game against Florida, hoping some people might think that the Florida Marlins still exist. Or, two, he could have said that Jose Abreu was 3-for-4 against the
Cardinals, who are borderline minor league baseball franchise based off of the last I looked this year. But you could have gone those two routes and made it seem better. But, hey, all right, at least he's had a good performance.
Because
the big issue that I thought was bizarre to go from Thursday where they had no timetable to Sunday where Dana Brown is saying, hey, he's going to be back any minute.
Mm-hmm.
I would have liked to see a game like this. Now we have a game like this.
There we go.
Does it make you that optimistic considering
no,
it's against rookies, I guess?
Double Rods would like to know if he gets a baseball card while he's down there.
Good question.
Will it appear on his baseball card? 099 batting average. Then it, good in Florida, and then TBD. Will that all be on the baseball card?
I hope so.
Or just the end result?
I hope so.
I don't think it will be. I think they'll leave this out. Unless Jeff Bagwell deems it important. How often will they remind us of what he did in the complex league when he comes back?
Well, the back of his baseball card shows an OPS of almost 900.
Boom.
But you should have said almost 900.
Oh, good point.
You're right. What is this league called?
Complex League. Oh, by the way, You'll enjoy this story.
I hope it works. I really do.
Yeah.
I feel bad for him. He seems to be well liked by his teammates, and he's going through just the slumpiest of all the slumps. And it sucks when all of a sudden you just can't do the things that you were able to do before. But
So I bought MLB The Show the other day.
Oh no, you video game addict, you!
I did. And
it's not even MVP baseball.
I had to activate, Lance McCullers and Luis Garcia to the 40-man roster.
Mm-hmm.
Let's play a game. Who did general manager Joe George cut first from the 40-man roster?
Did you play this game before last night's game or after last night's game?
Before.
Okay, so it wasn't.
So I had to add someone to the 40-man roster. So I'm cutting a person low on the totem pole. Who did I cut first?
I'm going to guess Hunter Brown.
Come on, you don't know nothing about me. How much are we working together?
Is he on the team?
Blair Henley?
He's on the team.
He's in the game.
I didn't even know that. Listen, no offense to Blair Henley. I wasn't sure that they would include Blair Henley in the game. Now, it's been a while since I played a baseball video game, but baseball 05, a lot of the minor leaguers were made up players.
They don't do that anymore. Now they have a deal with minor league baseball, so they put some of them in the game. So, yeah, first thing I did was add Lance McCullers to the 40-man roster.
The poor man.
I cut Blair.
You have been.
I cut him.
No one has had such a one-sided vendetta punching down as a radio host, which is saying something, as you have against Blair Henley.
Look, we have a few opportunities to do it. This is one of them.
The sign of a bully. I have a few opportunities to keep someone down. I'm going to keep doing it. The man has a family. It was unfair that he got put into that situation. You are a meanie pants.
Yep. All right. That's
meanie pants.
Let's find out what's going on in the world. It's time for garbage time.
Okay.
Oh, I love trash.
Garbage time.
It's garbage.
Starts now.
I'm the trash man.
This is garbage.
This has been a reoccurring story in garbage time. Camilla Giorgi.
Ooh.
Tennis player / lingerie model who Italy under weird circumstances. We're finding out that she left Italy because she committed tax fraud. Also, she skipped out on 6 months' rent. Also, she stole $100,000 worth of furniture. So, she's on the run, and I just want her to know that I can fix her.
You're going to fix her?
I can save her.
How?
I can change her.
What are you going to say?
It doesn't matter how.
You're going to teach her to file her taxes. Oh, wait, you haven't done those.
No, I'm not going to do that. Hey,
you know what, Paul?
That is a turn-on that she doesn't pay her taxes.
Compatible.
Yeah.
That's a first date conversation.
I like it. She's a libertarian, you know?
Yeah.
This is what I'm looking for. I can fix her. I can change her.
Paul Gallant. What's her name?
Camilla Giorgi.
Camilla Giorgi. And Paul Gallant. Athletes.
Thank you for saying
that
about me.
Don't apologize.
You made my day. You made my day. I think I'm done. Now that you've called me an athlete, all right, my day is successful.
This is how this relationship's working so far. You call me a bully, I call you an athlete.
I like that.
What else you got?
Does sound abusive when you say it like that. But you're abusing Blair Henley, so you get your kicks in on the dog.
When I cut him, it said he was going to get money.
Okay. Adam Sandler, in the making of Happy Gilmore 2, wants John Daly and Tiger
Hell
Woods.
Yeah.
Daly's going to say yes. I really wonder if Tiger Woods will.
I mean, the whole thing's got to be based on the senior tour and Happy and Shooter squaring off one more time. John Daly's definitely going to be in this. And I hope Tiger is.
I do, too. Okay, as we continue to go through garbage time, guess what, guys? There are more mosquitoes this year. More mosquitoes than there's ever been. And why are there so many mosquitoes? Warmer temperatures,
mm-hmm.
heavy rainfall. Mm-hmm. But if you thought there's more mosquitoes out there, there are. One of my buddies got absolutely lit up by mosquitoes on Saturday, and I've never seen bites that look like that. So he might have the malaria.
That's not good.
R.I.P., Mike. I love you. R.I.P. They look bad.
Which Mike?
There's so many Mikes.
Is it the Mike that I know?
No, it's not. I know too many
Then good
Mikes.
Luck to that Mike.
I know too many Mikes.
I just want to make sure it wasn't the Mike that I also
but
knew.
There's lots of mosquitoes out there, so you got to watch out.
Yeah, I got a text this morning from Dell. He's like, all right, guys, we're outside. It's hot. Bring bug spray. So I bought bug spray, and then they let us move inside.
Oh,
so
no,
only John and Lance and Dell suffered.
I always have bug spray in my car, just in case, in addition to my cleats, because as you said, I am an athlete. there is a gathering of Kyles in Texas.
Okay.
The city of Kyle, Texas, had 706 Kyles of all ages turn up to a park that's in the suburbs of Austin. Sadly, there weren't enough Kyles
what?
To overtake the record of the most people with one name in a city. Ivan met in Bosnia. 2,325 people named Ivan met in Bosnia in 2017. So the Kyles failed, so they should probably go back to drinking Monster Energy drinks and punching holes in drywall.
Would you try to go to this?
No.
There was like...
I don't want to be around a bunch of Kyles.
No, all the Pauls, buddy. Like, if there was like a world record for most, and it was like, hey, we're going to do Paul this time.
No. No, absolutely not. No.
No,
I'm the best Paul of all time.
Fact.
Paul McCartney, you suck.
Oh.
I mean, got named after him.
You're number two.
I got named after the God.
Oh,
that,
really? You did?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. Someone's Knocking at the Door is literally a song about a man dropping the kids off at the pool, if you will, while someone's knocking at the door. I found that out the hard way.
Just a reminder, Joe Espada today said Jose Abreu, quote, sounds like he's ready to go. Can't see him, but he sounds like it.
3-for-4 sounds ready to go, Joe.
Hey, guess what? I saw blankers, so I think I get to leave.
I mean, it was a pretty dramatic pull-up. They both pulled up in their golf cart and with, like, 5 minutes to go. So, yeah, I mean, Joe, it's time for the show.
Let's leave.
They can't bully you anymore.
All right, hey, Paul, guess
that's
what?
For me now.
Where are we going tomorrow?
Highway Cantina. Can't wait.
Yeah, come hang out. Get some 975 margaritas
Tall
with
Texan
us
margaritas.
Tomorrow. Can't wait. Goodbye.
Peace.
Warning. You're listening to ESPN 97.5.